Welcome to Compassion Collective.
Join us on today's episode where we share our reactions and reflect on some golden nuggets that came out of our recent conversation with Dr. Russell Coltz.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm good. And I'm very excited to talk a little bit about our conversation with Russell, because I feel like just in what you and I were discussing earlier, it just feels like a lot, it spurred a lot for each of us.
And very different things for each of us. There wasn't like actually a whole ton of overlap, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, totally, totally true. Where do we start?
Well, I think one thing that we might want to circle back to in the discussion that is a really core tenet of CFT that was alluded to in the discussion with Russell that I think is worth slowing down and fleshing out a little bit is the three modes of being or the three emotion regulation systems that he briefly mentioned, of drive, threat, and this kind of safety or calm, connected mode.
Yeah. So, okay. So for our listeners who many of whom probably don't have any background on this, let's jump in and just give some background on what those three systems are. And then we can talk about specific examples.
The idea is that we, in compassion focused therapy, there's this model that we have three emotion regulation systems, right? Three different kind of like modes that we can be in. And all of these things act sort of in concert with one another or are bidirectional mm-hmm. in some way. But each of them is like core to our survival, basically, right? And so you can see how the threat system, for example, is core to our survival from the perspective of like, if there's danger in the environment, you want to be able to detect it really early and you want to be able to get yourself out of that situation or protect yourself in some way, right? So obviously we have this threat detection system and a set of behaviors that goes with that. And then there's the drive system, which is essentially like that we want to obtain goals. We want to seek out things that are necessary for our survival. So those things are like food and sex and XYZ, right? We see goals in our environment and we go after them. And how those systems look in modern life is a little bit different than like, you know, running away from a lion or running toward, I don't know, some kind of like fresh body of water when you've been in the desert, right? It looks a little bit more like trying to get into a school and maybe trying to, I don't know, what can threat mode look like? Like maybe being in a social situation that you're really freaked out about and like drinking, right?
Right.
As a way of like, you've got that kind of threat mode going and you're trying to address that. So then there's this other mode, which is the safety, connected and calm mode, which we like to think is like downstream from compassion and self-compassion and self-soothing. And one of the things that we talked about on the episode was that folks tend to work with this assumption sometimes without even knowing it, that if they're in threat mode enough, right, they're protecting themselves enough, or if they're in drive mode enough and goal attaining enough, then they're going to feel safe and connected and calm, when actually that's a mode that can be intentionally cultivated outside of the threat and drive modes.
Yeah, that makes sense. I also think people sometimes think that I need to stop my threat and drive mode in order to get into my self-soothing mode. And I don't think that's the case either.
Right, exactly. They're not incompatible. Like, we need all of these systems for different things. But I find that, like, you know, folks will often, you know, want to, like, just like you're saying, get out of the driver threat modes and like thinking that just by doing that, there will be like this achieving of calm contentedness. And actually it's something that has to be, like built and again, like, and not really in the same like goal attaining drive mode kind of thing, but in this like given space, right? And like given intention and let it build so that that becomes a whole nother space that you can occupy in your life outside of drive and threat.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of it also has to do with energy. Like, what energy are you approaching something with, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that the tapping into our self-soothing mode requires a different energy, and we can learn to recalibrate ourselves to you know, tap into different body systems, tap into breath in a different way that actually does physically change our energy.
Totally, totally. Yeah. And one thing that I like to do just to get clear on where I am in these things is, like, I can just take out a piece of paper and draw, you know, three circles, one for drive, one for threat, one for safety. And I will give a little bit of thought to, like, how big are each of these circles in my life right now? Cause sometimes, like, my drive mode is so big, right? It's like the whole friggin' page, and my little safety, like, circle is nowhere to be found, right? And so that can help me to recognize, where am I? What do I need to do to at least get these a little bit more in balance?
Yeah, and I think building on that a little bit too, when I've done that exercise, what I'll do is I'll also make notes about either people or recent memories or recent things that have happened or are going on that I feel like I'm associating with a certain mode.
Yeah.
Because that helps me get really concrete and specific about what's going on for me in my life that I feel like is activating a certain part of my system.
Totally.
Which can be really helpful too. And I think this is, like, a really good self-assessment tool. I think it's a really good way to check in with yourself and see, like, you know, how am I operating in the world? What's going on for me, and what's taking up my emotional, physical, you know, space and energy?
What is my energy going towards, and how is my energy being affected by being in one mode or another? And that absolutely has to affect the way that you're showing up in the world and you're showing up for other people, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you think you are right now, if you were to kind of tune in with your systems?
Given I've had, like, a bunch of coffee today, and I'm like, I'm in my to-do list mode, you know, I'm like, right? And I'm like, okay, this has to get done by this time or whatever. And so that's drive for me always. It's like, okay, and obviously there's some of that, like, stuff needs to get done and all of that, whatever. But if that becomes my predominant mode, is like productivity and, like, reaching towards goals all the time instead of being more process oriented, that's when for me, I know, like, I gotta slow down and try to shift a little bit,
right,
towards a place that's like, actually, everything in this moment that I have in myself is okay. And I'm safe and I'm good. And just a reminder,
yep,
that, like, reaching all of those goals isn't going to bring me that.
Yep. Yep. It's really interesting. I'm just sitting here thinking, reflecting on how I feel like when I'm in my drive mode's really active. I feel like my threat mode is also fairly active. Like, I feel like drive and threat are fairly linked for me. Like, I notice a lot of associations between those modes.
Totally.
I also feel like a lot of times when I am driving hard, I feel like I feel far away from my authentic self in a way. I don't know if you relate to that or if you actually feel like there's maybe more integration for you, but I feel like for me, sometimes if I'm so concerned with, like, a certain outcome or, you know, achieving something or whatever it is, I find that I'm really focused on other people and not as much on myself. And I'm really focused on other people's expectations of me, worrying about disappointing people, worrying about, you know, meeting expectations. And then that's where threat kicks in for me. Cause it feels like, you know, stakes are high and there's risk.
Right. And so can you maybe describe a little bit, like, where you've been, what mode you've been in?
Yeah, I feel like recently my threat mode has been super active. And I feel like it's funny. I mean, I'm aware, I'm kind of, like, checking in with myself and realizing, you know, there's a lot, like, I have a lot on my plate right now, like, a lot. And so there's obviously a lot going on for drive too, because I'm in a place where it doesn't feel like I have much quiet in my life. It feels like I have a lot of projects on my plate, and, you know, I'm just aware of the kind of busy feeling. But even with all of that, it still feels like my drive mode is not the overwhelming thing for me. It feels like my threat mode is overwhelming for me. And I'm noticing that coming up a lot with sleep. Like, my sleep has been really dysregulated and disrupted recently. And I'm finding that that's like having a pretty powerful effect for me on these different other areas of my life. And I find that, actually this kind of leads us, segues us into something else in the episode, with Russell that was really important. But I find that with what I've been dealing with and some of this like sleep disruption, I'm finding that it's, I'm getting a lot of new and different anxious thoughts, and I'm feeling this like urgency, to like buy into the thoughts or to fear what I'm thinking, or, you know, and so I'm actually paying a lot of attention to something that we talked about as being really important in our conversation with Russell, which is like noticing when that sense of urgency comes up, which is really common when we're having powerful thoughts, when we're having powerful emotions like anger, anxiety, you know, sadness, whatever it is. Oftentimes it can be accompanied by this sense of like, I need to act and do something now. Something needs to change. Something's not right. You know, it's like, and that's a big thing for my threat mode. It's like, something's not right. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. Something's wrong.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, there's like almost like a blinking light in your car and it's like, pull over, like go to the, you know, like, come on. This needs to be attended to now. And often when we act out of that place, it doesn't affect the greatest change that we want.
No.
Like, create just more problems for us.
No, because, and I think that goes back to our conversation with Paul in the very first episode, or second episode technically, where, you know, basically what he said is that self-compassion entails intention. It entails not even slowing down, because sometimes we can be compassionate when something fast is happening, but it involves being able to clarify intention. And I think when you're acting from this place of urgency where you're not slowing down and you're acting so fast, how can you be clear on your intention?
Yeah, your intentions go out the window. Your emotions are like in the driver's seat fully. Yeah, totally. And you don't, I think one thing that I learned about recently actually was, and there's different literature on this, but there's some literature suggesting that emotions really last. Like, I mean, there's some folks who say 90 seconds, right? Like an emotion will last 90 seconds. Some people will say like 8 to 12 minutes, whatever. The bottom line is that like most of us can ride out that amount of time, right? And like allow for some space, do some self-soothing, and then make choices later on down the road. But there is something so instinctual about like emotions arising in us and us thinking that we need to act in that moment instead of letting it take its course.
Yeah.
And well, I was just gonna say, like, I mean, emotions do help to guide actions, right? Like if you're anxious for a test, like maybe you should study that. Like there are clear links between why we have emotions for survival, but I think that sometimes they don't really match, as Russell was saying, like our current modern environment.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, like in CFT, we talk a lot about like the old brain and the new brain and the way that, you know, certain patterns, which go with certain actual physical systems, like they make sense. They make evolutionary sense. And they're not totally suited to work the same way in our current environment.
Right.
You know, with the current, you know, just our current lives, what we're dealing with now. So I think you bring up a really good point. I also think one of the things about emotions and this urgency to act and not being able to slow down and ride it out, I think part of that also comes from a place of fear that an emotion is permanent, even though we can stop and rationally check in with ourselves and say like, no, like when I've been angry, I haven't stayed angry for years, you know, every
moment. When you're in it,
it feels like that's it.
Right.
Yeah.
You're like, unless I do something to get the heck out of this emotion, this is now my new reality. But there's so much evidence from like the past that's not the case.
Right. I had an interesting, you know, I was just saying that I've been struggling with my sleep recently, and I had this really interesting experience when I woke up. I think it was yesterday. I had a really back-to-back chaotic day. And I woke up with that feeling of dread of like, oh no, how am I going to get through today and do everything that I need to do? And, feeling like, can I handle it? Can I do this? Can I, you know, just that dread of like, can I make it? And I just paused myself in that moment yesterday morning in bed. And I just said, whoa, okay, that's a thought. Like you're having a thought. And I noticed what accompanied those thoughts immediately was like really fast, automatic anxiety, panic, dread, right? You know, really intense kind of reactions. And when I was able to just take a moment and say, hold on, like those are just thoughts. You haven't gone through your day yet. You in fact don't know what it's going to be like. And let me tell you, it was actually a great day. And I felt like I got a momentum that I built on and just, you know, had great meetings and great sessions and whatever. But again, it's like, you know, I had that thought and immediately I clung to it. And it was like, this is the reality. This is what today is going to be. And that is the urgency that I think we're talking about. And then of course my brain goes to all these like, I need to escape. I need to get out of this. You know, what can I get out of? How can I, you know, reduce the burden of my day, whatever. But it was just, I feel like what happened yesterday for me was a good example of what we're talking about, of this, like this thought and these intense emotions that came up that were accompanied by this sense of urgency of like, I need to do something now, or this is the way it's going to be. And this is the way it's going to last. And first, what was really cool is I was able to check in with myself in the moment, which can sometimes be really hard to do, right? And then I also was able to pay attention throughout the day to like how, you know, it's like, wow, these things, these meetings, these whatever are going really well. And it's not the day that I predicted this morning when I had that thought and that emotional reaction.
Right. And that thought is just a thought.
Right. And the thought is just a thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, it was really cool to be able to kind of see myself doing that in the moment, because that's hard. One of the things that Russell talked about in the episode, his own practice, that I just think is so cool. He was talking about how, you know, he is very naturally prone to feeling angry or feeling irritated, that's, you know, we all have our, you know, that's that button that gets pushed and that's kind of our go-to emotional response. And he was saying that, you know, if he's really in the zone with something and working really hard and focused on something, if something interrupts him or distracts him, that pushes that button for him. And so he's talking about, you know, as a professor, obviously there are a lot of interruptions all the time and at the same time a need to focus on work and be productive. But he just talked about this practice where, you know, if his door is open and he has office hours or whatever, and he's working and he gets interrupted, he knows that that response is going to happen for him. He knows he's going to feel that irritation and he just takes a breath. He says he takes a breath and he smiles. I think, is that what he said? He like takes a breath and he smiles. I think that's what he said he did. But regardless, the point is like taking that pause.
And making, like, in some ways it's an honest self-evaluation. And in some ways it's a judgment of like, actually, I want to go in this direction. And that's going to mean what in the moment?
Yeah. Well, I think what you're getting at is important too, in that before we can even really get to this point, we need to have a little bit of experience with self-assessment and watching our patterns, tracking our patterns to even know what they are and what the triggers are.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Sometimes it's not self-assessment. Sometimes people close to you will be like, excuse me, you're forever irritated when I, you know.
Right. Sometimes it's assessment by others and others, which is valuable too.
Sure. Well, it's all just like what comes into your awareness. And there are two ways you can react when something about yourself that you don't really love comes into your awareness. It can be like, thank you, I'll be on the denial, you know, river, whatever. I'm not interested in hearing that. Or there's this kind of discomfort with like, ooh, that's not how I perceive my best self to be. That's not how I want to be. And so that's going to require intention and like overriding an automatic response, which always requires intention, and then doing that. And so I think that that's, I don't know, I find that like just something so admirable in Russell, that he had that ability to say like, whew, I'm going to sit with this thing that was brought to my attention, you know, whether it was like through his own actions or whatever, other people's feedback, I don't know. And he could just say, that's not how I want to be. And I'm going to take steps to make a change. But if you don't allow that information in and to like settle in the first place, you're never going to take those steps.
Yeah. The image that I have in my mind right now is basically like, if you were looking at like a movie reel really fast, like you just see this playback and all, you know, all these scenes coming together. But if you were to break it down into frame by frame by frame, you know, and see it in editing mode, like that's what we're doing. We're slowing down enough and creating enough space to look at each of those frames and being able to say like, oh, okay, wait, that frame is where I went off track, where I didn't act in a way that I want to be acting with myself or with other people, with the world. And that's where I kind of tweak. But you need to be able to slow yourself down enough to even like be able to do that.
And be humble. not be above the process of self-editing.
It's so valuable. And I know, I mean, that conversation with Russell and hearing about his own practice and just really reflecting on this idea of suspending urgency, slowing down, creating space, I think, you know, is helpful for me to, I think helpful for everyone, but helpful for me, I know, to think about, you know, some of my own reactional tendencies and what I can do in some of those moments where, like, I do want to shift things. I do want to shift my actions and my behaviors. So I think that's super, super helpful. I also think that it goes back to something we talked about with Russell too, this idea, and this is a common myth of compassion, right? Is compassion being something that's like weak?
Or yeah, right? Weak, or as we're talking about, like, self-indulgent, which is like, that whole process is not self-indulgent. It is very much like a, you know, where can I actually take responsibility, right, for how I am in the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's also looking at the way that your behaviors affect other people and relationships too, which is not self-indulgent. That actually is a very, very generous, I think, you know, action to take. But I think it is really important to this idea that I don't know that I fully understand how compassion came to be seen as more of this like weak, meek thing. Cause I feel like compassion is one of, and self-compassion is one of the most courageous acts, courageous ways of being.
Absolutely. And I think it's along similar lines of, like, you know, a lot of Brené Brown's work has been around showing how vulnerability is really strong, when in our current sort of social ecosystem, we don't always think that way, right? Vulnerability, compassion, all of these things show weak, quote unquote, weakness or suffering, right? But it's not at all weakness. It's strength to be engaging in these processes, because you're willing to do something that could be criticized or could make you vulnerable to pain.
Yeah, totally. And when we go back to thinking, you know, what we've talked about with Russell, we talked about this with Paul Gilbert, you know, what compassion is, what self-compassion is. And if we go back to that definition, to, you know, the Dalai Lama's definition of like the attunement to pain or to suffering, and the attention to, you know, the intention to alleviate that suffering or that pain, like, that's one of the most courageous, bravest, strongest things a human being can do, right?
Right.
If anything, I actually see, if we're gonna, I mean, not that it has to be this dichotomy or this, you know, binary, but if anything is weak, I see the opposite, the like not being able to engage, the turning away. That to me is where we want to cultivate some strength. But I think the ability to turn toward, my gosh, I just think that it's one of the bravest things a human can do. One of the things that I was thinking that I also just want to make sure we capture, and this came up in our episode with Russell, is, and I really, you so beautifully talk about this, that this is part of how your self-compassion journey started, and one of the most powerful things that you can say to yourself. But Russell talked about this too in the episode, and I just think it's this question of like, what do I need right now, is so important. And I just encourage people, like, that's a place to start, you know, and to know that, like, it's okay to start with identifying small needs, you know, a glass of water if you're dehydrated, or a snack if you're, you know, undernourished in a given day, whatever it is,
or a nap, or, you know, turn your phone off.
It can be small things, but that is, I think, such a beautiful concrete question to be able to ask yourself, to tune in. I think so much comes with that question. First, what comes in is this attention to turning in, and even questioning, like, how am I feeling right now? What is it that I'm lacking right now? What am I missing?
Because that takes you out, just as you were saying, that takes you out of like drive mode, or maybe threat mode, where you're paying attention to things outside of yourself.
Yeah.
There's always kind of an external thing. And this is like, no, turn it around, slow it down, go in, because you also matter.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, what do you need? And I think some people really, really struggle with that, and it feels really new to them. And I think that it's an incredible place to start. I also think, you know, a lot of people will say, okay, like, cool, self-compassion, compassion, I'm in, like, what do I do? And I want to be like, here's a 10-step plan to doing, you know, whatever. But it's actually these really tiny things that would maybe be imperceptible to anyone else around you that could be a major shift for you. Right. In your daily life. And it's not like, yeah, again, it's not this like major self-compassion boot camp. It's just like,
yeah,
maybe just ask yourself what you need once a day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think too, I mean, one of the things that I like, when I think about compassion, I think about like, compassion is not necessarily what you do. It's a way to be. And that's not to say that there aren't action, you know, compassionate actions we can take. There are, and a part of compassion is action oriented. It's what are we doing to alleviate suffering, to meet needs, you know, all of that. But I also think that once you start practicing this stuff, and for me, when I've interacted with, you know, some of the experts that we're interviewing and the amazing people that we've met along our CFT training journey, these people really have a way of being in the world, like existing in the world. And I think that ultimately with enough kind of practice and mindfulness of these types of things that we're talking about and integration of them just into everyday life, it really becomes a way of living. It becomes a way of existing rather than just being stuck in like what to do.
Right. Right. Like a checklist of like, and then I'll be self-compassionate because I've, you know, I've taken a bubble bath or, you know, whatever the situation is. So it's like, well, first of all, that's self-care. But second of all, yeah, again, it's like, it's not all these really visible, obvious things all the time. It's like, this is an inside job. And a lot of it might not be visible until it brings itself to the surface in terms of the way that you then interact with the world differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, I'm just reflecting on, you know, when you and I really started a lot of this work a few years ago, I'm thinking just about myself and my journey in practicing this stuff. And I think that I did very much start in a place of like, okay, what do? I can do this breathing exercise. I can write this self-compassionate letter to myself. I can, you know, foster this image. I can write just this collection of like things to do. And I think that that is great. Like, I think that that's totally great. That's where one starts. Now, what's really cool is looking at myself, you know, a few years later, I really do. I mean, I still do that stuff. And I find myself asking this question more often of like, how do I want to be right now?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that that's the process of, you know, internalization is kind of what you're talking about. It's like in the beginning, you kind of, if something feels really new and different to you, you do look for external ways of building that muscle. And then at some point you're like, I'm strong. And like, how can I be differently in the world with this strength?
Yeah. And external, right. When you're starting out and building the muscle, external things, and also I think more concrete things, like that's a very normal human learning tendency, right? It's like when you're learning something new, you want concrete. It's how we make sense of things. It's how we, mm-hmm. right. And that's okay for those things to be learning blocks. And then it's just really interesting to see exactly what we're talking about, this like internalization process and integration process. And then be able to see like, wow, like I actually don't need to break things down into these like super concrete, specific things to do. Rather, they're granted, I still do these things, but they're more integrated into the fabric of how I'm seeing myself interacting with other people in the world.
Yeah, right. And just how you are on the day to day with different things that come up. It's like, again, that muscle is built and it can be used more reflexively instead of being something that you have to like haul out of the, you know, I don't know, like some ways you have to haul out of the closet once a week. Now it's just like, oh yeah, ready to roll. Like this thing came up and how can I, you know, think differently about it in a way that is kinder to myself. And it definitely affects how, I mean, there's just no two ways about it. It definitely affects how generous I am with other people. I think I've opened up a generosity towards myself that only then just flows out.
Yep. And I think that you're giving such a great preview to our next episode. And listeners will hear more conversation with our guest for next time, Tori Press, talking about exactly that, about, you know, tapping into those processes for ourselves does allow a different way of being with other people and the world. And as you said, a greater generosity of spirit in that way. So I think that that's a beautiful and important thing to recognize.
So stay tuned.
Stay tuned, and we'll see you next time on Compassion Collective with Tori Press. Thank you all for listening to Compassion Collective. You can visit us on the web at compassion-collective.com. Please also consider donating to our Patreon fund at patreon.com/compassioncollective. We'll see you next time. This episode is brought to you by your hosts, Michaela Swee and Susan Murray, co-founders of Compassion Collective. Audio editing by Kyle Turner. Music by singer-songwriter Michael Shines.